In John's gospel, in his account of the life of Christ, in chapter 6, we find John recording one of the few miracles that he does, but one of the most striking, I think, viewed from a human standpoint. As John tells us that there were 5,000 men who were following him and listening to his preaching, and they were hungry. And Jesus raised the question, now, how can we feed them? And the answer came back, we can't. All we have, a little boy here has his lunch. He has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. And Jesus told them to have the people sit down and to begin to serve them. And if you're familiar with the story, you know that all of them ate. And from the other accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, we know that 5,000 was just the men. There were women and children, so many thousands ate. And then they took up 12 baskets of fragments afterward. I mentioned that to preface now what follows later in the same chapter of John, in John chapter 6. Because that night, Jesus and his apostles crossed the Sea of Galilee and went over to Capernaum. And when the crowds found out he was there, they came to him. And on the very next day, somebody said this to Jesus. What sign showest thou then that we may see and believe thee? What doest thou? And then they add, our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Can you imagine how Jesus felt? That he had just done this incredible, remarkable miracle, and they knew about it. He later accuses them of following him because they want more of that to eat. But to ask Jesus, what are you going to do? Some great sign? Do something like what Moses did, seems to be what they were saying. And so they make reference to what we're going to talk about tonight, and that is this remarkable miracle that we read about in the book of Exodus chapter 16. When God provided, as it's called here and as it's called even in the Old Testament text, bread from heaven. Bread from heaven. Well, the Israelites, in a remarkable way, have been delivered from Egyptian bondage. They crossed the Red Sea and now have made their way down into the Sinai Peninsula. And we know eventually they would spend 40 years wandering in that wilderness. But they needed something to eat. And again, we have some numbers to deal with here. A little over 600,000 men, and if you add women and children to that, there's estimates as high as maybe 3 million people. How do you feed them in the wilderness? Well, that's what they're talking about. This was considered by the Jews as perhaps the ultimate example of God's provision for his people. Because from the very beginning and throughout that entire 40 years of time, God provided for them this bread from heaven, what we're familiar with as being called manna. And they ate this manna, as I said, throughout their wilderness wanderings. You know where the word manna comes from? The text actually tells us, if you go back there, and we're going to notice in a moment how the people got it and how God provided it for them. But the first time they went out and saw this, they said, what is it? Never seen anything like that before. And so that Hebrew expression was what it became called, manna. What is it? Something that God had provided for them. Let's just briefly notice. We'll not take the time to go back and read all of the accounts. There are actually a number of places besides Exodus where reference is made to what this manna was like. And there's some things we might wonder about that we're just not told. Let me add one other thing here, just sort of as an aside, but it's interesting. Remember when Jesus was tempted by Satan to turn stones into bread, and he said, man shall not live, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. Jesus was quoting Moses. If you go back to Deuteronomy chapter 8, Moses is referring to this, the manna. He said, remember when God gave us this to teach us that man shall not live by bread alone, but what proceeds out of God's mouth. All right, let's take a quick look at what manna was like. What was it like? If you have a concept in your mind of what it might have been like, wasn't anything like hamburgers, but it was nutritious and it fed them. So here's the description, sort of picking a number of different places. We're told that on the surface of the wilderness, I think the King James Version says, but then on the desert floor, after the dew had evaporated in the morning, this would appear. In fact, one place it speaks of it in terms of when the dew would come at night. The manna would be there. And then the next morning, as the dew would disappear, there it was on the desert floor. It's described here as being a flake-like thing, as fine as the frost. It's all further described as being white, like coriander seed. It tasted, one description was, it tasted like wafers made with honey. That sounds pretty good. I might just mention here, the rabbinical literature, you're not surprised probably to know that it was filled with all kinds of ideas that can't be found in the scriptures, but what they thought about it, and some of the rabbis, I don't know where they came up with this, said that manna was designed by God in such a way that whatever everybody wanted to taste like, that's what it tasted like to them. So I guess the people who like liver could eat, well, the Bible doesn't say that. But what it does say here, it tasted like wafers made with honey, but then there's another description, said it tasted like something made with olive oil. And perhaps in part that's because there were several ways of preparing it, as we'll see here. The King James says it looked like delium. And the NIV says resin. This apparently is an aromatic resin that sometimes will form. And so it had that appearance. It probably wouldn't taste like that. But here's the way they would grind it. They would crush it. And then they might boil it in a pot or they might bake it into cake. So there were apparently various ways of preparing this. But it was clearly a nutritious way for God to provide for them out there in the middle of a desert, Sinai. Something that could sustain them, to keep them alive, something to eat. As you know, they also were given quail later on to supplement this as well. Well, here's, it would also, it appeared when the dew would leave, and then when the sun would come up and the heat of the sun would hit it, then it would evaporate. So you had to get out in the morning to get your manna. Well, here's the instructions God gave them. You remember what the instructions were? On 6 days, Sunday through Thursday, they could go out and gather, and there are very specific instructions. They were to measure it by the omer, but they were to get, depending on how many in their family there were that would need to eat, they would get, but they would get just for one day. Don't think that you go out there some morning and it's all over the place, or we'll just gather up a week's worth or a month's worth. Gather it for one day on Sunday through Thursday. Then on Friday, you could gather enough for 2 days. The reason for that was the following day was the Sabbath, and God had already given them instructions to not do work on the Sabbath, and they were furthermore told that there wouldn't be any on the Sabbath. There have been all kinds of speculation about exactly if there's something today in the desert that might resemble or be like manna, and I've read several different ideas. One is the tamarisk bush giving off a resin. Some think some insects have given off things, but the fact that it would be there 6 days a week and not there the seventh, and knowing that what we're told and what Jesus actually said to them back there in John 6 is Moses didn't give you that, God sent it to you. And so it was a miraculous provision by God. And so we don't have to try to correlate it to anything that we've observed in modern times. But do you remember the story where the people questioned this? Well, we'll talk about that in a moment. Why would God do it in this precise way? I think there was a reason. I think God will tell us that. So we'll wait till we get to that. What I want us to do for the next few moments, really this is a lesson in two parts. And I'm not going to tell you what the second half is just yet. You may already be able to guess it. But let's notice some things that we can know about this manna. We kind of got the brief overview of the story in mind. So here's the manna. Well, as we just said, it was provided by God. You may recall that God also miraculously kept their clothes from wearing out. And at times, how much water would you need for that many people? And God miraculously would provide water to come from a rock on more than one occasion. He was seeing to their physical needs. And keep in mind, as Chris brought out in one of his lessons last week, that time after time after time, they were grumbling and complaining. At one point, they said, "We loathe this." Like they did, they were tired of it and complained about that even. But what God was doing was giving them what they had to have, not just so that they would enjoy a meal, but what are you going to eat? If you don't eat, you don't live. This is God's way of making it possible for them to survive. The plan, of course, was not for them to spend an entire 40 years, because of the failure of their faith, they stayed there for that whole 40 years. But throughout all of that, until they crossed over the Jordan, went into the promised land, began to eat from Canaan, this continued. God gave it to them. Well, it certainly demonstrated the power of God. Moses was at times challenged to how to and felt frustrated at times. How could he do the job of providing for these people? Have you ever had to try to cook for 50 people? And maybe you even had the food to do it, but you think what's an overwhelming task that is. Well, what we're talking about here is providing for hundreds of thousands of people on a daily basis. So that's certainly one of the many miracles that shows us the tremendous power that God has over his physical creation. He showed them that every day, or 6 days a week, that he had the power to make that available to them and it would be there for them. And it was free for the taking. Have you ever known anybody who took something for free that provided by somebody just out of the goodness of their heart, and then they griped about it, just didn't suit them, it wasn't good enough? Can you imagine how God felt about their murmuring about this? All they had to do, they didn't have to plant it, they didn't have to grow it. It was given to them free for the taking. Walk out there in the morning, wait till the dew lifts, and there it is. Take it up, take it to your family, and eat it. And so this certainly was a wonderful thing that God was doing for them. And this point, I think, is very significant. I'm not sure that they fully appreciated this, although it's quite obvious. There they were out in the desert. They could remember, of course, back in Egypt, and that was one of the bases of some of their grumblings. Back in Egypt, we had leeks and melons and fish and all of these things, and we wish we could have that now. But while they were out here in the Sinai desert, they couldn't take care of themselves. God was doing for them what they could not do for themselves. Clue, big clue right there for the second half of our lesson tonight. Something that they couldn't take care of, God provided for them the need that they had, that they were helpless to provide for themselves. It was exactly according to their needs. It was given out equally. All the people, I would suggest that there's a miracle even involved in how the rationing took place. But if they would take as God instructed them, they wouldn't have too much, they wouldn't have too little, it would be just exactly what they needed according to their need, and everybody got the same. God knew exactly what their need was, and he provided for it miraculously every day. And again, it was enough every day. Everybody had what they needed. It must be received on God's terms, and this is the point I mentioned earlier. Now let's take a look at that. Remember the instructions that God gave them? You can go out there Sunday through Thursday, get enough for one day. Don't get enough for two or three or four days, get enough for one day. Well, knowing human nature, what would you suspect somebody would think? Well, I'm just going to get enough today to last me the rest of the week. And you remember what happened when they tried to do that? It spoiled and stank and it was full of worms. The next day they couldn't eat it. God again miraculously saw to it. They couldn't thwart his purpose. And some of them thought, again, human nature, why can't we go out on the Sabbath? Not a big job. So I'm not going to get double on Friday. I'll just go out there tomorrow and get some. And when they went out on the Sabbath, there wasn't any. Again, God was the one who was putting it there 6 days a week. So they had to do it God's way. Now let's notice that passage I referred to a moment ago, going back to Exodus 16. Here's what God told Moses. He said, now this is what I'm going to do. This is how they're supposed to do it. I will rain bread from heaven for you. And the people shall go out and gather a day's portion for every day. Now notice, that I may test them whether or not they will walk in my instruction. And as they did throughout their history, they didn't. At least some of them didn't. In spite of all that we've been looking at tonight and how they should have appreciated it and how they should have said, yes, God, you'll provide it for us and we'll do. You just tell us how to do it. Some of them decided, I'm going to get more than God says I should get. Or I'm going to go out on a day when God says not to go out and get it. And that was God's test. And I can tell you, God knew these people. And I'm sure he anticipated that they would do just what they did. That is determined in their own minds. They do it, but do it their own way. So it must be received on God's terms. Well, can you guess now what we're going to compare all of this to? It's an interesting parallel, I think, to all that we've said thus far about, or all the Bible's told us about manna. And what we're going to talk about for the next few moments is about God's grace. And this was God's grace, the unmerited favor of God in providing this. But let's bring it home to us. We're not going to go out tomorrow morning and find something on the lawn that we can have for lunch. Don't think we would. But we do have God doing for us in essentially in the same way what he did for them. In his grace provided for us And we'll notice at the last what the embodiment of that grace is and what Jesus really said to them back there in John 6 about bread from heaven. But here again, just like we saw about the manna, God's grace is provided by God. It is a demonstration of the power of God. We talk about the power of God in the material world and his creation and all these various ways we can see tremendous energy and power. That's impressive. But I think that even pales in significance to what we're talking about and what God has done for our spiritual needs. And I'm sure this parallel in John 6 was very much in Jesus' mind. These people, as he told them, they ate the manna, but they eventually died. In fact, the whole generation died as punishment. But what Jesus is telling you, what God has provided for your spiritual needs, if you'll eat this real true bread from heaven, which was him, you'll never die. And the point is, they knew if they didn't eat, they wouldn't survive. Isn't it interesting that people can have a good, strong sense, because we're reminded of every day. We get hungry, and we know what happens to a person who stops eating. But how many people are there who have no really appreciation or realization for their spiritual need, what will feed their soul? God knows we need that, need it more than we need any physical food. And this power of God to provide, well, let's just notice, it's free for the taking. That's what grace means. Unmerited favor, but certainly here is God, here I am a sinner. And in God's justice, he could say, you, Leonard, you die. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. But God provides without me having given any reason. It's free for the taking. I've heard preachers try to illustrate this point in a number of different ways. One of them that got my attention one time, and this is a stretch to even imagine this would happen, but I guess somebody like Warren Buffett or somebody like that could do it, and just advertise, all right, on a certain day, anyone who will be present at this location and the first 1,000 people, I'm going to give them all $1 million. Well, let's make it more reasonable. Make $10,000. Can you imagine the reaction? I expect somebody to get trampled. I mean, when they go to Walmart on Black Friday and trample people over a big screen TV, but immediately we know what the reaction would be. Why? Because those people realize that's something that I can benefit from. That would be a huge boon to me. And it's free. All I got to do is just go there and be sure I get in the front of the line. You can see the point. And I think it's a good point. What we're talking about here is eternity and our soul's spiritual need and the forgiveness of our sins and being restored to fellowship with God and having a hope of heaven. That means more than any amount of money. Jesus said, what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? And what God is saying, you don't have to do some great thing in order to have the benefits of my grace. It's free. I provided out of the mercy and goodness of my heart, my son to die on the cross so that your sins be forgiven, and you just have to receive that. In some ways, I realize there are demands of discipleship. I'm not trying to minimize that. Jesus tried to emphasize that you're making a big commitment when you become my disciple. But at the same time, there, in one sense, to just accept the provisions of God's grace is probably less demanding than to go out every morning and pick up the manna. And so God's grace is free for the taking. Why? Why is it that so many people are not interested and not willing to accept what God's made possible in Christ? And the point we made earlier, can you see how now that is exactly the case here? What does Paul say in Romans chapter 5? We were without strength. We were unable. We need to understand that. There is a very popular idea, I think, that says, well, now everybody sins, but we can do a lot of good things, and that'll just sort of take care of those sins. That's just not the way it works. There's nothing that I can do once I have committed sin and have been separated from God. There's not a thing I can do in and of myself to make that right. God did it through Christ as he died on the cross. So as those people out there in the desert were helpless to be sure that they could have something to eat every day, we're helpless. We're starving spiritually. But God's provided for us what we couldn't provide for ourselves. And we need to appreciate that. If we had any kind of appreciation, I don't think there's ever a time that we would grumble and murmur and complain and say, our soul loatheth this grace, would we? And it's exactly according to our need. Jesus, you remember, told us that even with reference to the material things, that God knows our needs better than we know them ourselves and before we express them to God in prayer. And he certainly knows our spiritual needs. And he gives us exactly what we need. Do I fully understand why the atoning death of Christ is necessary for the forgiveness of sins? I haven't got it all worked out yet in my mind. I'm working on that. But I can certainly say that God knew what had to be done, that he could be just and be the justifier of me because I sinned. And that's what he's provided in his grace. It's enough for every day. Enough for every day. Do you remember what is said? I realize we put this back in the history after the fall of Jerusalem as Jeremiah wrote the book of Lamentations, but I think he makes a statement here that's always been true with respect to the mercies of God. In Lamentations chapter 3 and verses 22 and 23, Jeremiah says, God's mercies are new every morning. And then he's led to say, great is thy faithfulness. You appreciate that? Every day when you get up, when you wake up and get up, God's grace is there, available to you for free. It's always, he will not withdraw it. Now we can reject it, we can ignore it, but it's enough for every single day. But now then, here's the point that really comes home to us, and one that many people do not appreciate. I can sort of gauge in my own mind how good a meeting I think we have when in the next few weeks or months, how many times I think in my lesson about, well, that he's talked about that. And you remember what Chris was telling us about the golden calf and how the Israelites had not completely put God out of their mind, but they were going to do it the way that seemed best to them. And that lesson certainly fits in with this story we're looking at tonight. A person could have said, well, God's good. God's gracious, he provides us the manna. I know he suggested that we do it this way, but as we saw a while ago, I'm going to get 2 days' worth today. Next morning it's full of worms, it's spoiled, it stinks. What was the point? It has to be received on God's terms, and that was the test. You remember the passage we read over there where God told Moses, this is why I'm telling you, it's going to be done this way, and you have to do it this way. And I know, isn't it ironic, I think, that so often people who want to emphasize what we're talking about tonight, that is God's grace, that the idea seems to be that grace would just negate or remove any necessity for us doing anything or conforming to some particular regimen or standard from God. Nothing could be further from the truth. The Old Testament is filled with examples of what God provided when they marched around the city of Jericho. They had to do, and there was very precise instructions given for how they were to do that. And on you can go. Naaman the leper had to go wash, but not just in any river, go to the River Jordan and wash. Do it that way. We just recently studied in our study on Sunday morning about the blind man that Jesus put the spittle on his eyes and told him to go wash in the pool of Siloam. He had to do what Jesus said. And again, it was God's grace providing what he couldn't do for himself. And as we're thinking tonight about what God has done for us in Christ, let's be reminded of the fact that I don't earn my salvation. Again, that's what grace means. But that just as he required of the Israelites that they do it on his terms, I think he's testing us. Sometimes people ask, why would God make it necessary for me to be immersed in water to have my sins forgiven? I don't know the whys of why God does everything he does. But as far as I'm concerned, that could very well be the same kind of test. Are you willing to submit to my will and receive what I freely give you on my terms? And that certainly was the case back here with the Israelites. Well, I said all this to bring us in. We'll go back now to John chapter 6. Do you remember that discussion that ensued there? One of the first things that Jesus was quick to tell them was, don't give the credit to Moses, although Moses was involved, certainly, and he was God's chosen leader. But Jesus tells him immediately, it was not Moses who gave you that, but my Father which is in heaven. But this gave Jesus a perfect opportunity to say, you're asking me. Now, you had bread, fish and bread yesterday over there on the other side of the lake. And you're asking me now to do some great miracle and to sort of duplicate or do something equivalent to what Moses did back there. And there you're talking about the bread from heaven that God gave you. He said, let me tell you about the real bread from heaven. So let me just read you some of what Jesus says here. Verse 35. Well, let's get verse 33 first. The bread of God which is cometh down from heaven giveth life to all the world. And they, kind of like the woman at the well, said, Lord, give us that bread. We'd like to have it. And Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. We talk about the grace of God providing our spiritual needs. It's all bound up in Jesus Christ. And clearly, he's not talking about something that can sustain the body. He's talking about spiritual nourishment. I'm the bread of life. He came, all right, let's read on. And the Father giveth, all that the Father gives me, so come unto me. Well, the people were murmuring. Verse 41. They murmured at him because he said, I am the bread which came down from heaven. We talked about in the class this morning. Jesus made some extraordinary claims, and they were true. But they didn't like to hear that. And so they said, isn't this Jesus, the son of Joseph? We know where he grew up. Bread from heaven, where he came from. And so Jesus goes on then, and we'll close with this. In verse 51, Jesus says it again in this way. I am the living bread that came down out of heaven. If you want to eat of this bread, you shall live forever. And as I said earlier, he told them, you want to go back and look at the story of Moses and the manna? And what you'll find is it kept them alive from day to day. But they died. And like the water in John chapter 4, the well, that water will give you lasting satisfaction. Not like drinking a glass of water today. Here I'm the living bread. And those who partake of me, and of course that chapter then goes on to Jesus talking about eating his flesh and drinking his blood and caused many of them to go away. But it was a perfect opportunity for Jesus to, I think, to very briefly make the observation that we're making here tonight. How similar it is what God had done for us in Jesus Christ, extending his grace. But these same principles that applied to them back there years, centuries ago in the wilderness still apply today in receiving what God has done for us that we couldn't do for ourselves. And we must accept it freely. God's terms. Is there anyone here this evening who realizes that at this current moment your life is not right with God? Now, I would hope that we all take this lesson to heart, but especially anyone who has done it. As I said a while ago, can you imagine anyone offered that offer from Warren Buffett and just say, no, I don't think I'm interested. The Lord's saying to you, I will forgive your sins. And whether we can even begin to commence to comprehend what heaven will be like, I've provided this place for you eternally. If you'll just receive it freely as I offer. If that's your condition this evening, you know what you need to do. We encourage you to come right now. Always stand.